Hey guys, welcome to the Mental Makeover Podcast. I'm Lauren Curtis. You've probably heard the phrase, the grass is always greener on the other side, but I believe it's greener where you water it. This podcast is here to provide you with meaningful advice from myself and others in order to give your little patch of grass the best chance to grow and flourish. Hey guys, welcome back. I wanted to create this episode for those of you who are struggling to make friends or find friends or maintain friends or feel like you're worthy enough for friends, like just everything to do with friendship, adult friendship. It's something that I get asked a lot about, and I have done a few episodes on this in the past, but I wanted to speak to someone who specializes in this, and I'm speaking to Hope Kelleher. She is a therapist based out of New York City, and she's the author of the book Here to Make Friends, How to Make Friends as an Adult. So yeah, we're basically just touching on some of the points she raises in her book. Of course, if you are interested in going into further depth in this topic, then you can purchase her book, and the info about that is at the very end of the episode. But for now, I just wanted to, share with you guys the most commonly asked questions and her answers to those questions. I went onto Instagram and asked my followers if they had any questions around friendship, whether it be making new friends, where to find new friends, dealing with old friendships or new friendships, or how to work through, you know, arguments, and just all different types of questions. And we got so many responses, so I've tried to list them all down and we'll cover them as we go. But I guess the most commonly asked question that came through was, where can you find potential new friends?
Sure. That is a pretty broad question. And I think, you know, but I mean, that is sort of the starting place for so many people.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, in my book, I delineate sort of how historically most people have made friends over their life course as small children, as adolescents, as teenagers. And so, you know, one of the things that I think makes it easy for people to meet and make friends is being in places where people are similar to you, and there's a sense of like sort of a community, or I'm going to call them an anchor institution, right? So it's sort of like a built-in group of people. You know, the workplace historically has been a good opportunity for people to make friends, but as we know, people's workplaces are very different from, say, that of our parents' generation. You know, more people are telecommuting and remoting in. And we also know that communities where people would sort of collect around is changing as people are becoming more disparate. So it is sort of a broad question. And I sort of take the stance that, you know, keep your eyes peeled for every opportunity that there is for the possibility of making and meeting friends. Certainly, you know, the go-to places are those institutions where you find people like yourself. So that might mean, you know, if you're into CrossFit or working out, that's sort of a community that you might be able to buy into. Or if you're a runner, join a running kind of club. Places where people can organize around, I think, are easy for a lot of people to kind of like, you know, take that first step in. The question from my perspective is, okay, so now you find yourself around a pool of people. There are two questions, actually. One, you know, if you find yourself around a community of people, how do you take the next step to actually cultivating a friendship? And then the second question is, well, what if it's really hard to find communities of people like you? Perhaps you travel for work and you're not home all the time. And so therefore, I really recommend a blend of like in vivo connections and also internet platforms as opportunities to make friendships. But, you know, sometimes we meet friends in like the most random places. You know, I recently met a prospective new friend, and I'm cultivating this friendship while I was out having dinner and drinks with a friend at a bar. And I just kind of, you know, I'm slightly extroverted. My book does talk about extroverts and introverts. But, you know, and I kind of hit it off with this woman. And, you know, she's actually from Melbourne. And I plan on sort of cultivating that friendship through social media. So I really kind of, I really encourage people to look for opportunities for friendship everywhere and all the time if they're wanting to
meet new people.
Yeah, of course. And going on from that, I guess you say that you're extroverted. I'm quite introverted, and I know a lot of the people that were leading questions were struggling with being an introvert and wondering how you make friends if you're a homebody and you don't like going out, or if you're actually just content with your own company, like, do you really need friends? So that's kind of two separate questions, but we can start with, I mean, you kind of answered it. If you are a homebody and you don't like going out, perhaps it's, you know, going online first, and then that's where you start those initial conversations, and then taking it into the real world once, you know, you've found someone that you click with. Is that how you would suggest going forward?
Sure. I think that I have a number of thoughts on the ways that introverts can make friends. And so, the biggest difference between extroverts and introverts, and there are ambiverts, which I'll speak a little bit more about, is that introverts actually prefer smaller, like, kind of social interactions, but of higher quality. So introverts actually like to go very deep in those connections very quickly, whereas extroverts really like to have more kind of connections, but, you know, tend to be a little bit more superficial, and not in a bad way, just that they're trying to manage multiple friendships at once. And sometimes it's a little harder to kind of go deep and have those quality relationships. Ambiverts are those people who are a little bit of both, right? They can turn it on when they need to, but, you know, perhaps prefer to like sit home and hang by themselves, can take complete joy in their own company. You know, so some tips for introverts that I find to be helpful with my friends who are more introverted is to buddy up with an extrovert, because extroverts can do a lot of that social small talk. you know, and that's why I have a lot of friends who are introverts, because they're like, well, you know, you just make it easy. And also, you know, if you know, I think of some of my friends who are introverted, you know, I know what their limitations are. Right. So if I'm hanging out with one of my introverted buddies, like going to a bar or like hanging out at somebody's house or a party, I know what their limits are way ahead of time. And I can kind of embrace that. Another thing for introverts is that even though it might be so tempting to sit at home and hang, I really do believe that you have to be intentional and put yourself out there. I do believe that when you stop accepting people's invitations, they stop coming. Mm-hmm. And so even if you can accept an invitation like on a quarterly basis, I think that would be helpful. And if you're not really into the party scene or the dinner party or going to a bar, but you want to connect with somebody, then invite them out for a one-on-one, coffee, drinks, dinner, a sporting engagement. You know, maybe you can go play a few rounds of tennis or watch a game, where you don't have to have like that a lot of small talk to begin with, but you can sort of find a shared interest and have conversation around that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I think a lot of the time with introverts, because we are so content with our own company for the most part, it does require that little push out of our comfort zone to actually get ourselves out there. And I think a lot of people probably don't realize how valuable friendships are until they make a new one, or they nourish an old one, because we do get so content with our own company that we forget that it's actually nice to have other people around too sometimes.
Right. And, you know, here's the thing. I think because the communities have changed so much, you know, we all need people, right? Like, we are all Homo sapiens. So we do need people to some extent. And truthfully, you know, people have varying degrees of the extent of their social networks that they need. But, you know, human connection actually creates positive hormones, a positive hormonal reaction in your body, creating dopamine and all of these feel good hormones. And there's a lot of research that indicates that people who have quality connections, and hopefully more than one, they don't need to be too many, you know, have improved physical and mental health outcomes. So it is important to realize, and even if you're like a 20-something saying, well, I don't really need them now, I think cultivating friendships, you know, the sooner you can do that, the better. I also am working with a lot of people who are on the cusp of retirement, and they're like, oh, you know, what am I going to do when I retire? Because they really didn't take that opportunity when they were younger to cultivate friends for a variety of reasons.
Next question. This is probably one that a lot of people struggle with. It's when you do find someone that you click with, how do you go about trying to initiate a friendship without feeling awkward or annoying?
I love this question. And I think I've seen it done a variety of ways. Part of it is being vulnerable. And I talk a little bit about this in my book, because to have deep, meaningful, quality connections, everybody needs to be a little bit vulnerable. And I'm not saying you need to kind of bear all. But, you know, first, when you find somebody that you have that friendship potential and chemistry with, take it to the next level. I think far too often, maybe we meet somebody, we're like, oh, they're kind of cool. I would like to see them again. And I'm a culprit of this too. And then it's like, oh, I don't follow up. Follow up if you are interested in somebody. In some ways, friendship finding is like dating. The downside is that you have to date a lot of your prospective friends. So it's a little bit more, or, you know, it's all relative. But I think people tend to be a little bit more intentional with dating instead of friend finding. And so, yes, you have to, just in like a first date or first couple dates, you do have to be a little bit vulnerable and say, hey, are you interested in hanging out, getting coffee, you know, doing this, doing that? And that takes a lot of courage to take the first step. Mm-hmm. But I also want to point out that most people really want to have additional connections. And so I would find it very unlikely that somebody would kind of say, ah, you know, I'm not just interested. Now, we all have busy lives, but I do think as the way that we are evolving as a human society continues, like more people are finding that they are feeling lonely and disconnected. So I think the first step is being vulnerable and putting yourself out there and saying, hey, you know, I would love for us to meet up again. Let's kind of plan something. And, you know, the truth is that it does take a lot of courage to be vulnerable because you might get rejected. But you know what? Don't worry. Move on, because there will be somebody out there who does want to be your friend.
That's exactly it. I mean, the potential to find a new friend is greater than, or is worth more than the fear of being turned down by someone. Because if you get turned down anyway, like, you know, you're not really, that just wasn't a connection that was going to work long term anyway, so you haven't really like lost anything. If anything, you've just gained something, because now you know that you can keep looking and then you can, you know, direct your attention elsewhere and to finding new friends. So it's just, yeah, I think the ultimate fear is rejection, but if you put it into perspective, you've got a lot more to gain than you have to lose.
Sure. And if I can offer one more thing, I think this is really important. And, you know, kind of thinking about dating, how people are very intentional, like they want their partner, they have to meet the right one. Friendship finding doesn't have to be like that, because there are different types of friends that serve different purposes. And I think that that can also help people put things in perspective. Aristotle had a book of Nicomachean Ethics, and I kind of drew from this because I just felt that it really resonated with kind of the stories I was hearing on the couch, and that there are, like, you know, three types of friendships. And so there's friendships of utility. You know, maybe that's the colleague at work who sits in front of the boss's office and hears all the office gossip, and you can kind of buddy up to them to hear more about what's going on. Or, you know, somebody at the gym that you sit with, you know, I do bar, and I, you know, maybe there's that woman I am standing next to day in and day out, and we have that chit chat, and that's a friendship of utility, right? Or if you need a carpool, like, hey, like, you know, you develop that friendship of utility. And then there's friendship of pleasure. You know, we see this start to evolve when we were sort of young. You know, maybe we could just, you know, partake in something that the two people would find to be pleasurable. You know, you like watching football or tennis. Maybe you have that one person in your life who could be your football or tennis or soccer buddy, but, you know, they're limited in that, right? You might not kind of like call them up just to vent for hours on end. And then there's like friendships of the good. And I sort of call those soulmate friendships, where you have that deep connection. That person's going to be there for you through thick and thin. You may or may not have a lot in common with this person, but, you know, they kind of get you and you get them, and it's sort of a judgment-free friendship. So rest assured that you will cycle through many different types of friendships, and they are all valuable. And I think that can be a helpful perspective to have when maybe you are meeting new people and it's not fitting, or it fits for a certain time and then it falls flat.
if you are meeting up with someone for the first time, what are your tips for making a great first impression?
So I think, you know, I actually have done Bumble Friend, which is sort of a friend finding app. And I think, you know, part of it is really, and this is sort of like on an intrapsychic level, you know, really before you go out, especially if you're a little bit more shy or timid or introverted, I believe in the power of self-talk. So remind yourself why somebody would want to be interested in you. Right? Like kind of come up with a list of, you know, 5 to 10 things that you really like about yourself. I think it's also important to have a repertoire of questions, you know, that you might be interested in learning, you know, being curious about that person, really, you know, being curious and asking them questions about themselves. Everybody likes a good listener. People do like to talk about themselves. So it's sort of the both end, that being having enough courage to be vulnerable and talking about yourself, but also maintaining a stance of curiosity is helpful. And I think, you know, again, going back to like a first date, give yourself a time limit, right? So don't anticipate if you're meeting up with somebody for the first time after maybe having a casual introduction that you're going to be going on a 3-hour date, but like set a limit. Right. And if you hit it off, then like stick with it, be in the present and enjoy it. But if not, like no worries, like set a realistic expectation for the time that you want to sit with this person.
My boyfriend is kind of shy like me. And once he's actually in a social situation, he's amazing. He flourishes, but he doesn't realize how amazing he is. But he often says that he finds it easier if he asks questions about the person, because then they start talking about themselves and then he can bounce off that, where it's a bit harder if, you know, it's just easier if you can bounce off someone who is confident enough to talk about themselves or ask you questions. So sometimes if you are a bit more shy, I feel like it can be beneficial if you just kind of divert the attention off you for a little while so that you kind of get into a groove with that person, and then you feel comfortable adding in little bits about them, about yourself, or maybe they'll ask you. But perhaps a question that came through was how to move past small talk, because I mean, most of us, I'm not a huge fan of small talk. I think perhaps it's, as you said, I'm an introvert. I like having proper conversation. Like if we're going to talk, I just want to talk about stuff that I actually care about, not how's the weather? Oh, how was your weekend? Mm-hmm. Like I want to actually get to know you. So perhaps that could be a nice way to start as well, is just asking questions about the other person. What do you do for work? Which might be a small talk question, but it could lead into a really deep conversation about why they do that for work, or if you know someone who also did that, and then just, like, you know, the ball can start rolling like that, perhaps.
Totally. And introverts are really good at that, going deep. So it's sort of like this horizontal line that then goes vertical. And I think, you know, again, taking a stance of curiosity, you know, how did you get into that career? What's your favorite thing about your job? What's the worst thing? You know, what's your favorite restaurant? What do you like? What do you like to get there? What attracted you there? And also like finding commonality. You know, I'm kind of thinking about, I was at this event about a year ago, and I'm like a pretty chatty person. I'm also a therapist, so I kind of do it for my job, although I am a good listener. And I was really struggling with like engaging with this, you know, it was a group of finance people. I'm not a finance person and I don't know much about it. And, you know, I had a pull. And I just started talking about my dog. I just kind of just started talking about my dog. and really it got buy-in, right? Because that's sort of something that most people, you know, can relate to, whether they like dogs or they don't like dogs. And I thought that was an interesting thing that I noted to myself. And really just if like being like practicing reflective listening. So if you hear somebody say, oh, you know, I had this great vacation and blah, 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 you know, so, okay, so you went here and like, wow, like what was your favorite part?
So we've spoken a bit about creating new friendships as adults, but let's talk more about understanding those friendships. So what would you say the most important things to look for in an adult friendship?
Sure. So I think that there's a couple of domains to consider friendship on. Reciprocity, I think, is hugely important. The premise that, you know, you each give something to the friendship and you get something. It doesn't need to be sort of like a tit for tat or a one-on-one. So for instance, if a friend's having a really hard time, Maybe, you know, they're calling you and you're giving them emotional support, but a couple months later, you know, you're going through something and they're for you in a different way. So reciprocity is important. Trust, I think, is another important value in friendship. Emotional intimacy is another important thing, like knowing that you can, you know, in friendship, friends should be there for you in the best of times and in the worst of times. And so those are some of the domains that I think are really key and important in thinking about good quality adult friendships.
In your book, you've said that vulnerability is the common denominator in a friendship. Why is that?
You know, I think that one, it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable, but to have those deep, intimate connections, you need to share parts of yourself that might be a little intimidating, scary, and you know, thereby leaving yourself being vulnerable. For somebody to really get to know you, you have to share intimate parts of yourself. And I think that's why vulnerability is the common denominator. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, small talk versus those like quality connections. If you only ever stay in that small talk category, you're not going to get that connection that you might want, right? So it means sharing a different part of yourself. There's a lot of risk in being vulnerable, the risk of rejection, the risk of being judged. And I'm not saying you have to be kind of like bare yourself completely, but I think that is actually how you form intimacy, much like dating, only friendships, you have to do it with a whole bunch of people.
We've spoken a bit about making friendships, but how do you maintain them once you've made them?
This is where most people have their challenges. And I can speak, you know, even for myself, as I'm going to call myself an upper limit millennial, when family life gets in the way, work gets busy, people are traveling, you know, us millennials potentially being responsible for our parents, like life gets complicated. And so sometimes we neglect our friendships. And this is where most people, I think, lose really good friendships and then end up regretting it, especially as they age. And so maintaining friendships requires intention. And so if you're not able to hang out with a friend and sort of kind of catch up with them and have that in vivo or live connection, I really recommend, this is where the value of social media comes into play. You know, this is where I think the value of picking up the phone and yes, actually talking to somebody on the phone, which, you know, I'm 37, so I did that when I was a teen, making friends, really is important. You know, people really forget to do that and then expect, oh, when there is a crisis that, you know, who can they call? And sometimes they've neglected those connections that they're left without their friends to kind of rely on. And so it requires intention and, you know, using that those social media platforms not only to make friendships, but to kind of maintain them. I really like the idea of sort of making, you know, I'm working with this one woman and, you know, she and her other female friends like go on a yearly trip together. I love that idea. I love having like friend trips. I love having the notion of events to go to. Again, I go back to like, if you're somebody who's not very social, take up those invitations at least on a quarterly basis. Be intentional. If there's somebody you haven't seen in a while, reach out and say, hey, like I haven't seen you, would love to catch up. Most people, I think, would be tickled and flattered by that idea. And it's a great way to re-spark that friendship. If I can use it my own example, you know, one of my close childhood friends and adolescents, you know, recently, a couple months ago, heard a song that reminded her of me and just out of the blue sent me a text. And, you know, we sort of were able to, you know, pick up sort of, you know, where we had left off when we were like 14. So again, that requires vulnerability, right? I might not have responded very well to a random text, but instead I really embrace it and I saw it as an opportunity and I took it. And so I think that's where people really need to focus is the maintaining of friendships, not just cultivating, but curating them and being intentional with them.
I think a lot of us can relate to this, but if you're single and then you're, you know, you're going out with your girlfriends all the time and you're, you know, going out on the weekends and then all of a sudden you find someone, and a lot of us, I mean, it's happened with pretty much all of my friends, including myself, you kind of drop off the face of the earth for a little while once you start dating someone because you're, you know, wrapped up in this new person. And sometimes that can be, I mean, it's exciting for you because obviously you're dating someone new and you're maintaining and nurturing that. But oftentimes your friends get pushed to the side or they kind of get sat on the back burner. And if the relationship doesn't work out, then it's awkward to come back to your friends and say, hey guys, because, you know, they're aware that they've kind of been neglected. So it's like that's looking a bit far into the future, but it is something to consider that even if you, you know, do find someone new or something, you know, or you get really, really, really busy with work or something, as you spoke about, if life gets, you know, overwhelmed by one particular thing, then just, if you do think about someone or if you see something that reminds you of a friend or someone that you care about that you haven't spoken to in a while, I wonder if some people might think, you know, oh, you know, I haven't spoken to them in this long. Maybe I've left it too late. But I think
and I'm that
repeating myself.
Yeah, but yeah, no, no. And yeah. I think you raised such a good point. And I have been a culprit and a victim of that too. But you know, that's where the vulnerability comes into play. True. Right? Having the courage to be like, yeah, my relationship didn't work out, but I still really miss you and I want to hang. And guess, you know, here's the thing, because I think it's a very typical experience that if we are on that opposite side, right, where maybe we are the friend neglected, I think you have a couple of options. I think don't take that personally. Love creates a biophysical reaction in your body, right? Literally it does. It's called limerence and it makes people like a little not themselves. So have some compassion for that. But also, I think it's totally okay to say if you are feeling on the neglected end, like, hey, I really miss you. I'm feeling like a little neglected, you know, and I can speak from my personal experience where, you know, I've had that happen. And so I've gone to great lengths to be like 8 o'clock morning phone calls before work. Hey, you've dropped off the face of the earth. Like, are we okay? Because I miss you. And then, you know, that can kind of clue people in. But even that takes vulnerability saying, hey, I really miss you and I'm feeling neglected. And so, you know, that's why I do think that vulnerability is the common denominator in friendship, right? Because in all relationships, really, just check out Brené Brown's work because, you know, it is exposing yourself to like, maybe uncomfortable feelings, but we are all humans. We've all had those feelings at some time or another at different degrees. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I think that's really important because I know, so many of my friends or people that I know and their friends, they've been upset when, you know, one of their friends has dropped off the face of the earth. And then when they come back, you know, maybe their relationship has kind of settled down now and it's still going strong, but it's just like not the little honeymoon phase, or perhaps it didn't work out. Either way, if someone does have the courage to come back or just for whatever reason, like it's easy to feel angry and to blame them and to say, oh, you know, why do you want to be friends? Like, why do you want to talk to me now? But I think if you just take a step back and put yourself in their shoes and be a little bit understanding to their situation and make it a safe space for them to come back, unless they have obviously done wrong by you and they've like actually ignored you and all that kind of stuff. But if someone has just kind of been swept off their feet and in a different world for a little while, like when they do come back to you, make it an easy transition and don't put that, you know, isn't right. I had a lot of questions about this. I think last year people were saying, you know, I've got these toxic friendships or this friend isn't treating me right. And it was really actually quite upsetting to hear how many people, aren't being treated right by their friends or don't realize that behavior isn't healthy. So what are some signs of a healthy versus an unhealthy friendship? And if the friendship isn't healthy, do you have any tips on breaking off a friendship or knowing when is the right time to break it off?
So I think kind of going back to the domains of friendship, and I might have left out a few, forgive me, but there's, you know, reciprocity, respect, emotional intimacy, how well people resolve conflict, interdependence. And so those are sort of core tenets of a healthy friendship.
And so I would say that, you know, there are a number of indicators of a toxic friendship. Like certainly, you know, we hear about like if there's like verbal abuse or emotional abuse or gaslighting, which does happen in friendships too, then that would, you know, be deal breakers for me. But everybody has to have a different, has to sort of assert their own deal breakers for friendship, right? And in my book, I kind of have people do a self-assessment, and there's a lot of self-assessment and then friendship assessment opportunities in my book, but really kind of consider all of the factors in the friendship in making the decision if this is a relationship worth repairing and working on, or if this is a relationship where ties should be severed. You know, toxic friendships, from my perspective, are those where you cannot really have healthy conflict resolution, right? Where your emotional needs are not being met by that friendship, and over time you just start feeling really, really like bad about being in it. But in healthy relationships, kind of like to my earlier point, when friends sort of fall in love and they fall off the earth, healthy relationships are where you can go back and really talk about what is working in the friendship and what isn't working in the friendship.
How do you know if you're relying on a friendship too much?
So I think that thinking about the word interdependence, right, where you have your own sort of, you're both getting stuff out of the relationship, but you're also both giving something to the relationship versus codependence. And what I actually like to have people think about is who are their friends and how they can be resourceful to you. So for instance, I, you know, have a good friend and she's really good at giving relationship advice. I wouldn't go to this friend for financial advice or maybe like work advice, right? So really being strategic in how you use your friendships to serve certain needs. You know, I see this a lot as a couple therapist in New York, where partners, you know, couples tend to rely on their person for their all and everything all of the time. And that is just overwhelming and creates stress in the relationship. So there is a parallel, I think, between that premise and as it relates to friendships. So really thinking about, you know, how you're using your friendship, if somebody is over relying on you, maybe how to create boundaries. I'm a big fan of creating boundaries. And again, like revisiting that talk. If, you know, I hear a lot of people coming into my office after breakups, and they will cite, oh, I've just been talking to my friends too much. And so you can offer some other supportive resources if you find yourself in a relationship that might be, you know, leaning on the more codependent side.
So on a separate note now, what do you do if your friends aren't at the same stage in life as you and it's becoming harder to relate to one another? For example, if one friend is really into partying and you're settling down and focusing on your family or your career.
I too hear a lot of this is a barrier to friendship. And I think it's important to kind of zoom back out and consider some of the research on friendship. So Robin Dunbar, who is a sociologist and I believe psychotherapist, so I'm not quite sure, but he's done a lot of research on friendship. And so Dunbar asserts that, you know, in your close inner friendship world, you have anywhere between 1 and 5 friendships. And then there's an outer circle and there's about like 5 to like 15. And then there's an even outer circle that's about like 15 to like maybe 50. And so at different stages in our life course, people will sort of migrate between those levels. I see this a lot with my clients who might be like having babies while most of their friends are single. And it's just nature. But the reality is that, you know, friendship is fluid and people can sort of find their way back into your inner circle when things maybe normalize and there's more in common. But I do think that sometimes it takes intentionality and vulnerability, meaning that if you are somebody who might be settling down and, you know, getting partnered and your friends are still trying to meet people, you know, don't forget to be intentional and engage with those friends. And then if you're feeling neglected from a friend who's maybe, you know, starting a family or whatnot, or careers moving in a different direction, don't be afraid to ask your friend in a compassionate manner to meet that need. You know, I want to hang out with you. I'm missing how our relationship used to be. You'd be surprised at the workarounds that people can come up with.
Lastly, let's talk about our relationship with ourselves. So what is the difference between alone versus lonely, and why is that distinction important?
I think this is such a crucial thing to think about. So, you know, there are times, and I think we referenced this earlier, where people prefer and enjoy spending time alone, right? It's a preference. They enjoy it. We know introverts get recharged by spending time with themselves. So there, the nuanced difference is when you're choosing to be alone and when you don't want to be alone and when that becomes a chronic condition, like lonesomeness or really like chronically lonely, right? So there's that distinction of when you're choosing to be alone versus when you would choose not to be alone, but find yourself kind of feeling alone.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I have lots of thoughts about being alone there. You know, this is sort of more attachment research, but people can actually feel very alone in crowds too. And that's like a separate thing. But in terms of the relationship with yourself, I think it's important to know when you're choosing to be alone and when you are alone, but would rather be with somebody or hanging out with people. And then when that, you know, the choice to want to connect with people is always present, but if there's a struggle and that those feelings kind of increase to loneliness and lonesomeness. And then you might want to start to consider talking to close others about that, those chronic feelings of loneliness, or a mental health professional.
And if you do find yourself suffering from loneliness, how would you combat that?
I think it's important to consider the varying gradations of loneliness, but I do think a couple of things might be helpful is, you know, book yourself. Create plans for yourself. Think of communities that might be interesting to you to participate in, whether they are online communities or sort of, you know, real life communities. So booking yourself, I think talking to people about it is actually helpful. And I, you know, forgive me because I don't have all of my data in front of me, but there is definite research that indicates that millennials and Gen Zers are the two loneliest generations compared to baby boomers and folks older than baby boomers. And I believe that is just because our sense of community is very different. So talking to people about, like, if you are alone, say you have that one person and you feel comfortable and have the courage to be vulnerable and telling them that sometimes you feel lonely, you know, talking to them, booking yourself, being intentional. So making an effort, I think, is the biggest thing that a lot of times people become so afraid to put themselves out there and be vulnerable and saying, you know, hey, like, it's a Friday night, you know, you want to go grab a drink or you want to go watch a movie if you are feeling sort of those symptoms of loneliness when you want to be with people, but that's the struggle. And also, like, talking to a mental health professional about some strategies. My book offers a number of strategies, you know, that I cannot recall all of them in this moment, unfortunately. But those are, I think, two things to really think about. I also love the idea of volunteering. And I think that has been a really helpful one. It makes people feel good, right? Yes. Most people feel good when they do good things for others. So that gives them sort of this like hormonal boost of endorphins and dopamine. But also, it's a really good way to meet new people. And it doesn't have to be sort of a high stakes game. You know, if you're feeling lonely, trying to seek out those low hanging fruit opportunities for connection, you know, talking to the barista, talking to your hair person, talking to the, I guess not the mailman anymore, but, you know, finding those little opportunities actually can combat to some degrees those feelings of loneliness. Sometimes what happens is when people become so lonely, that is when social anxiety increases, issues of low self-esteem increase, and they isolate. So you certainly don't want to get to that point. And if you tend to suffer from some of those limitations, like really looking for those low-hanging fruit, go into a store and start chatting up the sales clerk, because they're going to be super chatty to you. Those people tend to be natural extroverts, and like, they're going to talk to you because the presumption is you're going to buy something. So those are just some, like, kind of off the top of my mind tips for combating loneliness.
To finish up, how can we learn to like ourselves? That's a very loaded question, but I feel like all of this really does come down to that, like knowing why others should like you, what you bring to the table, like knowing your worth. Because if you know that within yourself, you will have the confidence to put yourself out there, to be vulnerable, to talk to new people, to basically just know that you're worthy enough of forming new friendships and people would like to get to know you. So yeah, how can we learn to like ourselves, or what are some tips you have for that?
You know, from my perspective, happiness comes from within. Yeah. So you can have so many friends, but if you cannot love yourself, then that's not going to be fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of self-talk and practicing meditation for those who struggle with issues of self-love and self-worth can be really helpful. I recommend that people come up with a list, and I think this is very basic, so forgive me. But like, why should people want to be friends with you? You know, I asked this question on the couch, tell me why so-and-so should be your friend, right? And then people actually really, most people can name at least 5 things. And remind yourself of why you would be a good friend to others. I think all too often in friendships, we think about it as being, or not that we think about it, but we talk about it as though it's very one-sided. So, oh, this friend did this friend did this, but why are you a good friend to somebody, right? Like, take an inventory of yourself. And I think that I give some exercises in the book that can be really illuminating, but just like really doing self-talk, you know, this is why somebody wants to be my friend. This is what I like about myself. And, you know, I think in our society, and obviously I'm from America, so I'm just going to speak for American culture, but we tend to focus on the negative narrative. But like, you know, when you can start to focus on the positive, right, you're rewiring those neurological connections. And so the more you can tell yourself about why you're loving, you're worth being loved, and why you're valuable, those thoughts will become easier and people will be attracted to you.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you so much for all of these tips. These are, yeah, worth their weight in gold, and I'm sure they're going to help so many people. And if you would like to delve deeper into everything that Hope has spoken about, you can read her book, which is called Here to Make Friends, How to Make Friends as an Adult. And you can find that on Amazon if you are in Australia, or if you're in America. It's also sold at Target and Barnes & Noble. Thank you so much, Hope. I really, really genuinely appreciate it. This is, as I said, going to help so many people, and it's something that I've been asked a lot, but I don't really feel qualified to answer. So it's great to have someone who specializes in this talk about it all and share their tips and tricks. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lauren. I hope you have a great week.